Welcome to Parents Perspective. When John came home at 7 p.m., he found Judy sitting on the steps wringing her hands. Honey, what's wrong? You look white as a sheet. It's Melinda, her eyes filled with tears. She's been in her room since noon and still won't come out. Well, he said, hanging up his coat, you know the way teenagers are, and she is 17. They just like their privacy.
Yes, but she had a day off from school today, and she wouldn't go out with any of her friends, or even talk to them when they called.
You don't think she broke up with that boyfriend, what's his name, or something like that?
No, I just think something's wrong. Even her friend Julie sounded upset when she called.
Well, I'll go knock on her door.
Good luck, dear.
If she won't talk to you, I think I'm calling Dr. Evans first thing tomorrow morning. Maybe he'll know what to do.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know and what can parents do about child and adolescent depression? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest specializes in just this area. Dr. Kenneth Tobin is a child and adolescent psychiatrist, currently chief of clinical child and adolescent psychiatry in the Mood and Anxiety Disorders Program at the National Institute of Mental Health, a division of the National Institutes of Health, Department of Health and Human Services. He is particularly interested in pediatric bipolar disorders, anxiety, depression, tic disorders, and pervasive developmental disorders. He's also professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences and pediatrics at the George Washington University School of Medicine. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Tobin.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
You know, we hear about depression in teenagers, but how prevalent is it?
Well, it's actually a significant public health problem. The rates for children are about 2%, which is a fairly low figure, but then they rise very dramatically as one comes into adolescence. And in fact, adolescence at any one point, 6 or 7% of adolescents will have depression. And if you look over the lifetime for individuals that are 18 and younger, almost 16% of those individuals will have had an episode of depression. What that means is in your typical high school classroom where you may have 30 or 33 students, there are going to be about 5 or 6 children who either have depression currently or have had a history of depression at some point in their lives already. And what's even more troubling about this is that if you compare those rates to adult rates later on, they don't climb that much. And what we're saying is that the rates of depression in adolescents are about the same as those for adults. Older adults, it may be a couple of percentage points more for a lifetime experience of depression. But by and large, most people that are going to get depression are going to have had it by the time they're 18.
Why is there the jump between childhood depression and adolescent depression?
We actually think that there are biological events that are going on in the brain of adolescents that lead them to be more vulnerable. So we think that the difference really has to do with how adolescents are growing and the kinds of things that are happening in their brains, as well as the kinds of events that happen in their lives. In adolescence, girls are 3 times more likely to become depressed than boys. And we wonder about what are the endocrine kinds of changes, as well as information processing changes in the brain that may be different between boys and girls that might account for this. But it's clear that there is this huge sex difference in the prevalence of the disorder in adolescents and adults.
I guess that dovetails into the next question, which is depression different in young people than in adults?
Well, I think there's 2 different ways to think about that question. We think that the problem, if you will, the biology underpinning depression, is the same throughout life. And so the kinds of things that influence younger children, adolescents, and adults, what's going on in their brains or what's going on in their chemistry, we think that's actually very similar. But if you're asking about how it looks or the kinds of signs that might present, we think that there are some significant differences. And if you look at the different kinds of symptom profiles, you find that there actually are some differences.
All the parents who are listening are going, okay, so what are the differences?
Well, so
we look for?
We can talk about them with a little bit more specificity than we used to be able to. For example, the vast majority of people who have depression are sad. They feel sad. But there's a huge difference in how sad they look. in fact, if you look at adolescents with depression, only about half of the individuals who are adolescent and depressed will look sad. They may experience sadness internally, but they don't go around crying and they don't kind of look mopey. Only about one in two who have depression will look like that. What you find instead is there's a pattern of irritability that's much more prominent. So the tendency to get in fights and to kind of get put off by every little thing that isn't going your way, or very high levels of annoyance, or even tantruming behavior, is not at all uncommon as a sign of depression.
Which is a real problem, considering you're talking about very adolescent behavior.
Absolutely. And so how does one go about distinguishing the kind of ordinary irritability of an adolescent as opposed to the irritability that may be a leading sign of depression? And it's important for parents and other people that are thinking about children that they're involved with to understand that there's a pattern here. It's not just the appearance of one particular sign or symptom that makes the diagnosis, but we're really talking about a pattern that involves three different domains. The first is a problem with mood. So children are going to be either sad or much more irritable than usual. A second is there's a kind of a way of thinking that goes along with being depressed that we all understand, but we talk about loosely, and that is you have this sense of no longer taking pleasure in things that you used to like to be able to do, or you withdraw from a lot of social activities that you used to take pleasure in doing. You look on things in a kind of pessimistic way rather than thinking that you're going to be able to succeed when you're trying out for something or activities that you're taking on. You kind of have this, why try? It's not going to work out. It's kind of the opposite of rose-colored glasses. You know, you could think about it as smoky glasses where everything looks as it's going to be dark and not kind of turn out. There's really ways that people think about themselves and their own skills that changes. And then the third major domain is that your body is actually different. The way in which you sleep, the way in which you eat, the kind of energy levels that you have, the kind of level of activity that you experience, all also are different. And they may be different at the extremes. For example, people may take to sleeping much too much, or they may find that it's very hard to get off to sleep, or once they're asleep, they keep awakening during the night and can't get back to sleep, or they awaken much too early in the morning and then can't return to sleep. Or with their appetite, they may eat more and more, or they may lose their appetite altogether and really not be at all interested in food.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on depression in youngsters.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Kenneth Tobin about depression in children and adolescents. It sounds like parents of adolescents particularly have to really have their antenna up, because all of the things that you're describing are perfectly normal adolescent behavior.
This is a change from baseline functioning. And so what you look for is not the kind of very gradual or minor changes, but the idea that somehow, you know, in the nice story that you started the program with, this is a girl who's actually behaving in a lot different way than she might have been a month ago or 6 weeks ago. This isn't her usual pattern. And when things change in that kind of more sudden way, it's right to be worried. It's the right thing to say, gosh, maybe this is depression. Just as there are things that might make it more likely for someone to get depressed, there are also things in a child's life, an adolescent's life, that make it less likely for them to get depressed. And so having close and warm family relationships and an ability to communicate fairly readily with one's parents actually are protective factors against the onset of depression. And so it's right for parents to be thoughtful about what's going on with their children and to try to be in step with them and to be thinking about, well, what are the kinds of stressors my child is facing and what kinds of things can I do to know how they're accommodating to those stresses? We tend to think about adolescence as a time where there's a lot more emotional turmoil or where there may be increased sleeping. But generally, when they occur together as a package, it's the right thing to raise a question about how well they're doing. It's true that on any one particular weekend, an adolescent might want to sleep in. It's true that you might have a day when your adolescent is kind of barky and kind of flies off the handle at every little thing. But when it goes on day after day after day for a couple of weeks, that's a different matter.
I am a parent. I don't know anyone that I'm supposed to turn to for this. What do I do?
Well, I think that there are going to be different avenues to pursue depending on where you are and the kinds of supports that are available to you. I think the most important thing is that parents shouldn't pretend that this is just normal adolescence. They shouldn't minimize their concerns. And the best first avenue is for them to speak to a pediatrician, or if they do have a relationship with someone in the mental health field, through a school counselor. These are very appropriate people to turn to when you have these kinds of questions. I think that pediatricians and family medical doctors are much better versed in the signs and symptoms of depression than they have been ever before. And there's been a very big push within the Academy of Pediatrics and within the Professional Association for Family Medical Doctors to raise awareness about the signs and symptoms of depression in adolescents and children. And so I think that that's a first resource to turn to. And then not to retreat from consulting with someone who's really a qualified mental health professional who understands children and adolescents and can help weigh in or render an opinion about whether depression may be present.
I think maybe we need to stress that it's important to get this kind of care the same way it's important to get care if your child has a strep throat. You would go to somebody for that, certainly.
Oh, absolutely. If a child was having trouble walking or having leg pain, we wouldn't say, oh, it's just growing pains, nothing will happen. And we wouldn't let that go on for weeks and weeks as the child was having more and more trouble with mobility. And yet, when something emotional stops them just as strongly as a problem with mobility, we don't get activated and we don't try to get to the bottom of what's going on. I think there's been a tendency to assume that adolescent turmoil is too much a normal part of adolescence, and it may keep us from making accurate diagnoses and intervening.
When our children are having emotional problems, I think there's always this little voice in the back of our heads as parents saying, you know, it's our fault. So if we take them to a mental health professional, the mental health professional is going to tell us it's our fault.
Well, there's a dark and sordid history in the mental health profession of seeing parents as the cause, if you will, of their child's difficulties. I think that we've moved well beyond that. I think the important thing to recognize is the modern view of these conditions is that they are an interaction between one's biological genetic vulnerability and events that happen in a person's life. In fact, the thing to consider when you see a child or adolescent who's depressed is whether one of the parents is depressed. Mm-hmm. Because what we find is, first, that depression runs in families. And second, it's very stressful for a child or adolescent to have a parent who is depressed. And in fact, that may precipitate a depressive episode in a child. It's not so much that it's the parent's fault as it is that the stress on the family that comes from the parent's depression becomes a stress for the child and, in fact, becomes something that's hard for them to overcome or deal with easily, and it causes the child to become depressed.
So then if there is depression in any member of the family, you watch the rest of the family carefully.
I think that's true. And so what I would also hope to convey to parents is that if for your own sake you don't seek treatment for depression, you may want to think about the effect that it's having on your loved ones and family members, that the best gift you can give your child may be an opportunity to treat yourself for depression and feel better about your life.
How likely is depression in childhood to lead to suicide?
Well, of course, it's the thing that we worry about most. There's a huge morbidity or problem in living cost to the individual of being depressed. But for the most part, depression in and of itself is not dangerous until you reach this point of suicide. Adolescents that are making comments about thinking about suicide, wishing they were dead, making attempts that are perhaps trivial to the adult's mind, to harm themselves or outright suicide attempts are the individuals who go on to kill themselves. And so those kinds of comments and statements and behaviors need to be taken seriously. The specific answer to your question is that the rate of suicide is elevated about 6 times in individuals who have depression. Suicide is something that occurs outside of depression, so it's not as if you only see suicide when people are depressed. But the rates of suicide rise about 6-fold in individuals who are depressed. Or if you look the other way, about 10 to 15% of individuals with depression will attempt suicide.
Dr. Tobin, how is depression in children and adolescents treated?
Well, these days I think there are two main avenues that people use. In the United States right now, we're very fond of pharmacological treatment, and so that's what people often hear. But the good news is that there are psychotherapies that are also quite effective for the treatment of depression. If you're looking at studies that are validated and reliable, where people have actually studied a technique carefully, the best evidence-based support is for something called cognitive behavioral therapy, in which individuals learn about the nature of their disorder and then have the opportunity to reflect on beliefs and ideas they have about themselves and the world that really get in their way and make it harder to recover from depression. In addition, there are pharmacological treatments that have been shown to be effective. It's interesting that if you compare the treatment for children and adolescents to the treatment for adults, it isn't always possible to assume that just because something works for adults, it's going to work for children. And these days, we understand that the studies for tests of different medications need to be done in children and adolescents in order to prove that they will be effective.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on depression in youngsters.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parent's Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Kenneth Tobin about depression in children and adolescents.
Can depression in children be a symptom of something else?
Absolutely. And in fact, when one sees a child who is depressed, clinically, when a physician or other healthcare provider sees a child who is depressed, it's important to think about what else may be going on. So often, we think that one answer is the final one for the question that's being raised. But when parents bring their child, what they're really asking is something wrong with my child? And that may require a more complete answer than saying they're depressed. What we recognize is that individuals, children and adolescents, who become depressed actually may have other disorders that precede their depression, that have become, if you will, a stress on them that has made it more likely for them to become depressed. So, for example, an individual who has an anxiety disorder is about 8 times more likely to become depressed during childhood and adolescence than someone who does not have an anxiety disorder. Or an individual who has conduct disorder or an oppositional kind of disorder may be 6 times more likely to become depressed. Or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, about which we hear so much, is also a stressor, and it may be that there's a five-fold increase in developing depression in individuals who have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. What parents need to recognize also is that being sad or being irritable doesn't mean you only have depression. There are many other things that can lead to that. First, there are a host of medical conditions that need to be thought about. Thyroid disease, for example, is not very common, but it can exactly mimic all the symptoms of depression. Also, if one has had a serious viral illness like mononucleosis or a very bad go-round of influenza, in the weeks after, you can feel like you don't want to do much, and you can feel kind of irritable and unhappy, and you may withdraw from activities. And there are a lot of things that could look like depression just in the recovery period from a viral illness. The thing that we worry most about, of course, is substance abuse. and children who are abusing substances can also have all the signs and symptoms of depression. And sometimes that arrow goes both ways. Sometimes people who are depressed get into alcohol or marijuana or different kinds of substances that they abuse as a way of helping themselves.
What about smoking?
There's actually a very interesting connection, a complicated connection between depression and smoking. It may be, in fact, that individuals who are depressed are more likely to begin smoking. It's also true that individuals who smoke may be more vulnerable to depression. It's a little hard to know what's the chicken and what's the egg in that particular equation. But I think the point that needs to be underscored is that depression is also a real risk factor for substance abuse. And that combination in children and adolescents is particularly awful. It conveys a particular risk for not being able to pull out of it very easily.
After a child or an adolescent has been treated successfully for depression, what's the likelihood of recurrence?
So the good news part about this is that this is a treatable condition, and maybe 80% of individuals who have depression can be easily and successfully treated. So that's really important for parents to know and for children and adolescents to know, that when they come in and they're feeling awful, they don't have to go on feeling that way, and that there are steps that can be taken that are not too difficult that can actually help them feel a whole lot better. However, individuals who develop depression in childhood and adolescence carry a large vulnerability to this condition, and so about half of them are going to have another episode. And as you follow them into the future, it may be even more than 50% of individuals will have subsequent episodes of depression throughout their adult lifetime.
So the idea is to have our antenna up as parents to know that our adolescents may have a recurrence, to let them know so that they can be able to treat this when it comes about?
That's very nicely said. In fact, one would say that the successful treatment of depression means that the adolescent and his or her parent are aware of what their particular signs and symptoms are so that they can be alert to those should they rear their heads once again. So often people get the idea that they have depression, so they took this pill and that was the end of it. And that's really an incomplete treatment, in my opinion. What one wants to understand is, this is what happens when I begin to get depressed. This is what it looks like. This is what I feel like. And if that should happen again, I know where I can go and who I need to speak to about getting myself out of it. It isn't that people walk around with a kind of sense of doom about their condition, but they know that this is something that can happen. It's like having a trick knee. You know, sometimes I'm doing my particular athletic activity and my knee goes out, and I know that I have to ice it and I have to stay off it for a little while and then I can play again. But if you keep encountering the same problem and letting it go and just having it work its bad effect on you, then you suffer more and more over time. And that really doesn't help anyone.
Well, now we have a bunch of listeners who are anxious parents wanting to learn more about depression in youngsters than we have time to go over. So have you got some resources you could suggest for them?
Actually, there are wonderful resources available for people now. And there are organizations that are terrific. And also, there are places on the web that people can go to. There's a wonderful booklet from the National Institute of Health called Let's Talk About Depression that's available free. If people wish, they can download it from the web. That is www.nimh.nih.gov.
Okay. Want to give that one more time?
www.nimh.nih.gov, or they can write using the NIH website. And there's also What to Do When a Friend is Depressed, which is a guide for students, because in fact, classmates have a clearer idea of what's going on with students than parents. There's an interesting study that looked at how likely parents are to recognize depression in their children, and the results are very disappointing. In fact, only about 20% of children with depression are recognized as such by their parents. There's also a wonderful organization called DRADA, D-R-A-D-A, which is the Depression and Related Affective Disorders Association. And they have a website and also have a wonderful book that's called I Wish I Were Never Born, I Hate Myself, which is a very nice... it's the kinds of things that a teenager might say to you, however, when they're depressed. And they also will send personal copies to individuals who ask for it. And that's available from their website, which is www.drada.org. And there's also another related website, which is www.depressedteens.com, that's part of DRADA. In addition, there's the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance, or DBSA, and they have a website, which is www.nancydmda.org. And then in addition, there's the National Mental Health Association and the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, or NAMI, that are excellent resources for individuals who have any sort of affective disorder, whether it's depression or manic depressive disorder.
We are so grateful that Dr. Kenneth Tobin has been able to join us today to clarify issues of mood disorder and depression in youngsters. Thank you so much, Dr. Tobin.
It's a pleasure talking with you both.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show 170. Tell us what station you're listening to, if you can. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. There are no W's. It's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.